over the last decade or so, there's been a lot of publicity about a cult-like group that calls itself the Westboro Baptist Church. They're based in Kansas. You know them because they're the ones who go around the country protesting at mostly military funerals, but also all sorts of other places, any place they can get attention. And they carry with them signs that are offensive to most people. They say God hates fags. They say all sorts of horrible anti-gay slogans. And they have been vilified by most in America, and yet they continue to do what they do under the direction of Fred Phelps and his daughter Shirley Phelps, who is essentially running this cult now. My guest today used to be a member of that cult. Her name is Lauren Drain. She got involved in it when she was 14 years old. When she was 22 years old, she was thrown out of the WBC and is now writing about that in a new book called Banished, Surviving My Years in the Westboro Baptist Church. And she joins me now here in the Big 550 KTRS. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for joining me here today. You're not a member of the Phelps family and never have been, right?
Right. Yes. Okay. No, I'm not.
So how did you get dragged into this at age 14?
My father set out to do a documentary on the church, which he first intended to do to mock them and make fun of them. And after spending a summer with the pastor and Shirley and a bunch of the members trying to make the film, somehow he started to think different things and, somehow decided he wanted to have his whole family join the church.
You were living in Florida at the time, and so you were uprooted at age 14. You were probably in high school and dragged across the country to Kansas to live in an area you did not know with people whose views... Well, how did you view them when you first met them at age 14?
When I first met them, well, my father had isolated me from my friends at school. He actually took me out of my high school, isolated me from my friends, and for... You know, months on end, I was kind of just in the house by myself, not allowed to communicate with anyone. He actually started encouraging me to talk to the granddaughters of the pastor, who were actually pretty friendly to me, and I kind of communicated with them through email and mail. So I, at that point, was cut off from everyone. My father already was controlling and manipulating me.
And abusing you, right?
I was seeking his attention. I was seeking his approval. And also friends as well, which I end up making friends with some of the girls that went to that church.
Yeah, and your father was abusing you as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was both physically and emotionally abusive at the time, yes.
Okay, so he brings you to this cult, and there are people there who are being nice to you, something you did not have in your life at the time. And still, by the age you were, by the time you were 14 years old, you probably had been around all sorts of people with all sorts of views of the world. So I'm curious, at the first WBC event you went to protest, whether it was at a military funeral or somewhere else, and you had to hold up those signs and chant those slogans, did you think you were doing the right thing?
The first pick I went to, we were not yet picketing military funerals or actually funerals at all. The church got more extreme in their views over the years. When we first started doing things, yes, they had hateful signs and... I guess at the age of 14, I was still impressionable. You know, my father was kind of manipulating me into thinking, he wanted me to start learning about the Bible. He started calling me like his good Christian daughter, you know, after I started like seeing what the whole thing was about. So I think more than anything, I was manipulated into believing some of the things. You know, I don't think I had world views on everything at the age of 14. And, you know, my whole family decided to do this, and I became inundated with their doctrine and their lifestyle, and that's what, you know, sort of ended up happening to me. Did I question things? Absolutely. It took a few years for me to start questioning things, but, you know, at the time, I was assimilating to this belief. My father was, I was getting a lot of approval from him through that, and the brainwashing of the church was pretty strong, you know, in terms of isolating the children from outside views and such like that.
Yeah, so your dad had taken you out of public school in Florida, but once you moved to Kansas, were you allowed to go to school? Because I know a lot of the Phelps grandchildren went to regular public schools. Did you?
Yes, I did as well. I went to school with the Phelps kids out, actually. We kind of kept to ourselves. It was just, you know, we didn't make friends with outside people, really. We were more just like by ourselves. And I think people kind of didn't want to have too much to do with us anyways. You know, we were pretty public figures in terms of our protests. We even picketed our own high schools and colleges. So
how did other kids treat you? I know you weren't friends with them, but were you kind of always on the outside of whatever inner circle there was in any high school?
Kids didn't really like us that much. We didn't really want to be associated with the other kids. We were constantly being told by our parents that, you know, everyone on the outside is evil. They have evil intentions. They're all sinners. They're all going to hell. So we had kind of this, like, arrogant, you know, kind of attitude that we were better than others. And, you know, it kind of kept us separated from people in terms of making any friends.
So as you moved through high school, what started changing your mind? Or was it even later than that that your mind started being changed?
I would say a few years after, maybe like age 19 or 20, after reading through things in the Bible, and I started questioning, you know, are some of the things we said, some of the signs we held. I didn't think we were right to be judging people and condemning them to hell and this and that. I didn't think that our line of thinking, that they started getting extreme. They started, like, praying for people to die and, like, wanting to protest funerals and tragedies. And I didn't know how we could possibly justify some of the things we were saying. You know, they didn't used to do some of the extreme things they do now. They'll picket pretty much anyone and anything. They'll picket, you know, funerals of small children, military funerals. And I was like, how are we able to judge people before we even know them? And even if we do, like, how can we say these things? Like, that they're in hell? Or I couldn't make sense of it in my mind. And when I started finding verses in the Bible that supported otherwise, I started asking questions. You know, I asked my parents. I started asking some of the members. And, you know, they didn't like the questioning of it at all.
Yeah, no.
You know, they... No.
Anybody who's running any sort of totalitarian regime, whether it's a government or a cult like this, they don't want questions. They just want obedience, right?
Right. Correct. Exactly.
Along the way, did you encounter gay people?
With what?
Did you meet gay people? Did you? You obviously weren't going to befriend them in those early days, but I'm curious if being around any gay people in your high school or watching TV and going to movies and being able to go online, all of which was permitted, as I understand it from your book, did any of that start softening your views towards homosexuals in America?
Definitely not. At the time, it did not. You know, we had a pretty full-fledged, you know, belief system. You know, even though we would, you know, listen to music or watch TV, we would still criticize people and judge people, you know, right away and say, you know, I don't like this person. They're gay, or they enable gays, or this or that. We had a pretty strong, you know, judgment right off the bat. They didn't hesitate at all to reinforce that at home and with the children. So I think I, as well as the other members, had very judgmental views on things until I started questioning things, until, you know, it ultimately led to my banishment, which I'm actually very thankful for. But it wasn't until the outside world I started meeting people on my own. I studied and realized I shouldn't be judging and condemning people like that. And I realized people are actually a lot kinder than they make it out to sound.
I'm Paul Harris, talking with Lauren Drain, who's written a book called Banished, Surviving My Years in the Westboro Baptist Church. As you probably know, Lauren, two of Phelps' grandkids, Megan and Grace, also left the church in the last year or so. Four or five others had done that previously. Do you think that this is generational?
Good question. I think more and more will start to leave, and it does start to shatter the foundation. When I was in the church and somebody would leave, you know, as much as they try to pretend like it doesn't affect them, like the parents and such, I saw, like, for instance, Josh, one of Shirley's oldest sons, leave. You know, she was emotional for at least a week or so, you know, questioning herself, questioning her motherhood, questioning if she, you know, raised him wrong or if she, you know, did him wrong and this and that. And, you know, you really start to see their human side on the inside. They're not going to tell you that they do those things. They're going to deny it to the fullest extent. But that's how they keep their membership, is to continue to keep the facade that, you know, they're all against everyone who's out and, you know, you know, only for people that are in the inside. But, I mean, as you can clearly see, you know, Megan and Grace, they made their way. They decided they did not agree with some of the things they were doing, and they decided, okay, it's 27 years later or 20 years later, and we're going to go out and find our own way in the world because this isn't matching up. Our parents don't want to listen to us when we, you know, when we say to them the things that are wrong, and so they had to leave. They had no voice in changing things at the church.
Have you talked to Megan and Grace?
Yes.
And
yes, I have.
What kind of relationship do you have now?
We're really good friends. You know, Megan and I went to high school together, and we've shared a lot of years, very close. You know, we're the same age, a month apart. And, you know, we got right back in touch. You know, we share a lot of the same feelings on things. You know, we've seen the injustices done on the outside. We've seen the injustices done on the inside. And, unfortunately, we share the same thing. You know, we don't have our families because we don't want to be part of this church anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that means that they're not going to have any contact with us. They'll say cruel and horrible things about us. And, you know, we just have to endure that. And so we're there to support one another. And that's actually given me a lot of hope that they both left, that more people will be leaving.
So since you've been out of this cult for 5 or 6 years now, was it hard for you to expose this history? Here you are living in Connecticut. You got a fiance. You're a registered nurse. You're trying to build a new life for yourself. Was it hard to dredge all this stuff up and make yourself publicly available to talk about what had happened and what you had been a part of?
I think so, yeah. I mean, in the very beginning when I first, I was first approached by people, actually more people encouraged me to write a book. It wasn't really my original idea. I wasn't ready, you know, I was still dealing with my own form of trauma, you know, being cut off from my family. I definitely wanted to make a new life for myself, and that's what I was busy doing. I feel like I'm much more settled in terms of my mind, my life, and my friends. But you know, my good friends all know, and they're very supportive, and they're very accepting and understanding. You know, they don't hold the past against me. And as much as it is kind of unnerving to reveal these personal details of both my life and my past within the church, you know, I'm trying to set a good example, and I see that people are leaving, and that's a good sign. And the only way to really shake things up in terms of more members leaving or my siblings being able to see the reality of the situation is to speak out about it. And I can't talk to them otherwise. So I was trying to use this as an opportunity to help more people leave, to help people understand what a cult is really like. You know, brainwashing is a very strong method, and it is effective for children. And thankfully, I'm out, and my mind is different, and I'm not holding those same beliefs anymore. But the children don't really have an option, and that's just the saddest part of it all.
Where was your mother in all this while your dad was abusing you and dragging you into this hell?
I honestly don't know what to say. I mean, I feel at times she struggled with it, and at times she would fight against it and even fight against my dad. But my dad is a very authoritative, like, manipulative presence, and, you know, I can't even imagine being a wife to him. My mom is a very sweet, tender, kind of like passive person. She's always kind of made it her vow that she would never, you know, never leave him or never ditch the family, anything like that. So I think she always wanted to keep things together. And she also, he manipulated her as well into thinking that now he would, you know, be a Christian and now he would be studying the Bible and this and that, things that he never would want to do before. So I think, unfortunately for her, maybe she got caught up in it too. And now she has a whole life there. She has her children there. And I hope one day she can see that it's not the way to live or to raise children. But I don't know. My dad's a very manipulative person, so we'll see.
And so you have not been allowed to talk to her, you know, for more than 5 years, right?
I've called her. I called her about 3 years ago, and we talked on the phone. Oh. And I could definitely sense something in her. You know, she mentioned, I was just having a conversation. I was basically telling her, hey, Mom, I miss you. I love you. How are the kids? You know, I was telling her I think I was like 23 at the time or 24, and I said I bought a new condo. I'm living on my own. I'm having a good life. I just want to let you know I'm okay. I checked on her to see if she was okay. And for some reason, in her mind, she considered that a threat. And she said to me, you're not asking me to leave your father, are you? And I never said that to her. I would never tell her to. But something in her mind must have caused some doubt. And I just feel like, you know, something stirred up in her mind to feel feel like she's stuck there.
Lauren, where does the WBC get the money to transport three dozen or more people to all sorts of places across the country, not near Kansas by any means? Every corner of this country you guys have showed up in, or they have showed up, not you, but, well, I guess at a time it was you, showing up at these funerals and other events. Where does the funding come from?
Well, I know when I was there that everyone was expected to pay their own way, and even the children at young ages, 14, 15, you know, would use their job, whatever it may be, and save up for picket trips, save up for plane tickets. And there really is no freedom to use your own money. You know, there's no hobbies you get to be involved in. There's no, you know, vacations. There's nothing. You don't get to spend money on your clothes or hobbies or things with friends. You know, our money, our whole lives are dedicated to the picketing and the protests, and that's what we spend our money on as well. So I just say that for the most part, they pay their own way. I mean, I know they get tax breaks, you know, because there's a so-called church as well. But the funding coming from anything else, that's what I saw when I was in the church.
And they've also been very successful at suing people and getting settlements in that. Shirley, as I understand it, is quite litigious and is a lawyer and does that as well. Have you?
Yeah, they have a lot of attorneys there, Margie being one of their big attorneys.
Have you ever heard from or met any of the families of any of the dead soldiers whose funerals were picketed?
Have I met anyone personally?
Yeah, or heard from them in any way?
I've definitely heard from them, yes. I have a fan page on Facebook, and I've communicated with a lot of people regarding things, and I've heard from, you know, wives of fallen soldiers, mothers of fallen soldiers, all kinds of people that I've affected in the past, and for the most part, everybody's very supportive. They understand that, you know, I'm sorry for what I've done, and they're very forgiving. I'm getting a lot of good feedback with that, because I've made open apologies in my book. I've made open apologies on YouTube, on my fan page. You know, I am sorry for any of the harm I've caused, and I understand, you know, that why people would be terribly upset.
Last thing I'm curious about here, and then I'll let you go, Lauren. Have you and the half dozen other young members who have escaped slash been banished from this cult, have you ever considered getting together and trying to get in there and get to the other younger members who are inside the cult compound there in Kansas and try to talk to them about how they should get out too?
Absolutely. You know, that's the biggest thing that comes to all of our minds. I think it's a little bit more difficult when we're dealing with people that are very litigious. These aren't our children. They're our family. They're our siblings. They're our cousins, that kind of thing. But in terms of having any legal guardianship or anything like that, I don't think it's as possible as one would think. You know, I even described when I was trying to leave for the first time, I wanted to say goodbye to my younger brother, and I was terrified to even just show up at school, because I thought they would, you know, call the cops on me or you know, tell me, get a restraining order between me and my siblings. That's how intense they are with their, you know, beliefs and protecting their kids. So, I mean, I'm sure there may be ways. Right now, I'm just doing the best I can to speak out and be an example. But if there are other ways, you know, I'm sure we'll explore them.
Well, Lauren, I appreciate your time today. I have to be completely honest and tell you that 10 years ago, when you were a believer and a member of this cult, I would never have allowed you onto this radio show. But now that you are an outsider and can look back on it and see the error of your ways and the evil that is being done by the members of this cult, not just to the outside world, but to those within it, particularly the younger members, I'm happy to have had you on here and to promote your book, which is called Banished, Surviving My Years in the Westboro Baptist Church. Lauren Drain, thanks so much for talking today.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.